And welcome to Coast. My name is Richard Serrett, your guest host for tonight's, this morning's broadcast. It's good to be here. And the sound of my voice is emanating from a fabulous steel and glass structure on the shores of Lake Ontario. The shiny and relatively new studios of Talk Radio AM 640, Coast's longtime Toronto affiliate here in the Great White North, Canada. And thanks for inviting me into your home. Wherever you are tonight, this morning, my wish for you is that you are safe, warm, and well-fed. Some of you may have heard me on my talk show that airs out of Canada, the conspiracy show on Zoomer Radio in Toronto, and my television show of the same name that airs across Canada on Vision TV. I hope you'll stay with me all night and straight on through till morning. We have a lot to do before we sleep, my friends. Over the next 4 hours, we're going to be covering a lot of ground here on Coast, talking about corruption, big oil, election fraud, dead bankers. The tense situation in Ukraine and Crimea will likely creep into the conversation, and even a word or two about missing gold. But we haven't forgotten about what can only be described as one of the greatest mysteries of this young 21st century. And of course, I'm referring to Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. The latest from the Associated Press is that the missing Malaysian airline plane was deliberately diverted. That comes from the Malaysian Prime Minister. And authorities have focused their investigation on the plane's crew and passengers after confirming the jet's communication systems have been deliberately disabled. Now we're hearing the jet flew west for nearly 7 hours after dropping off radar. India, their officials say they are suspending their search for the missing plane. The search area is being expanded as some areas are eliminated. China is complaining about a lack of accurate information. And the pilots' homes, as I say, are being searched. If there are any new developments regarding the missing plane, I will get that information to you as quickly as possible, so you can have your radio set here on Coast for the duration. In hours 2, 3, and 4, you're in for a special treat. If you despair for the state of investigative journalism these days, you're going to want to listen to what my guest has to say. He's a Damon Runyon character, a hard-boiled investigative reporter of the First Order, replete with rumpled trench coat and a fedora, an irascible never-say-die attitude that has left that has led to blowing the lid off some huge stories. Some huge stories you won't read in the New York Times or the Washington Post. And the funny thing is, maybe not so surprising, is that Greg Palast types with razor blades, and for that reason, despite living in New York, he's practically in exile in his own country. As I say, because of the types of stories he takes on, mainly election fraud, big oil, and something called vulture financiers. And while our thoughts and prayers go out to the families of the missing passengers on board Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, there is another mystery that seems to be intensifying every week. But again, you're not necessarily hearing about it these days. It involves a trail of dead bodies of financial executives across the globe and a missing Wall Street Journal reporter who was working at the Dow Jones newsroom at the time of his disappearance. So in hour one, my guest Douglas Hagman and I will be delving into the mystery of the growing list of dead bankers. Hagman writes, if the bodies were dots on a piece of paper connecting them, results in a sinister picture being drawn that involves global criminal activity in the financial world, the likes of which is almost without precedent. It should serve as a warning, he says, that we are at the precipice of something so big it will shake the financial world as we know it to its core. It seems to illustrate the complicity of big banks and governments, the intelligence community, and the media. Although the trail of mysterious and bizarre deaths detailed below begin in late January of 2014, there are others. Not only that, there will be more, he says. According to sources within the financial world, and based on his findings, he says, they are not mere random tragic cases of suicide, but of the methodical silencing of individuals who had the ability to expose financial fraud at the highest levels, and the complicity of certain government agencies and individuals who are engaged in the greatest theft of wealth the world has ever seen. Douglas Hagman from the Northeast Intelligence Network will explain why we all need to be paying attention to this growing list of banker deaths and how they point to fraud at the highest levels of world economies and include events even in Ukraine. My name is Richard Serrett. and this is Coast to Coast AM. Douglas Hagman is the director of the Northeast Intelligence Network and the CEO of Hagman Investigative Services, Inc. He has 20 years of experience performing investigations in the private sector for many Fortune 500 companies and is a well-known surveillance specialist. He's the author of Tactical Surveillance, a training manual for investigators who perform covert surveillance assignments. He received certification in email tracing, internet profiling, and threat assessment in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. He's a graduate of the Laboratory of Forensic Science and is certified in bloodstain pattern analysis. He's been used as an operational asset by federal law enforcement and various police departments. Following the attacks of September 11, 2001, Hagman began using his investigative skills and training to fight terrorism as an unpaid volunteer from the private sector and established the Northeast Intelligence Network monitoring terrorist websites so that another 9/11 could be avoided. Douglas, welcome back to Coast AM.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here tonight.
Before we get started, I just want listeners to know that yesterday, I believe it was, your mother-in-law passed away, and despite what is a very difficult time for you and your family, here you are on Coast dispensing some very important information. So I want to, again, on behalf of myself and everyone at Coast to Coast, extend our heartfelt condolences to you and your family, and to commend you for being so selfless and your willingness to come onto the program tonight.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you so very much. And it's a difficult time, but looking at what's at stake here for all of us, I think it's important to get the information out there. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this, of course. And it's really important that people understand really what's going on, what's at stake.
Well, we're going to find out what is at stake. Again, we're talking about this growing list of dead bankers, and many of these deaths have been declared suicides, although in many of the cases, as we'll hear, suicide is not an adequate or even a reasonable explanation. But first, Douglas, you wrote last month that this is the one of the most important investigations you've ever done. Why do you feel that way?
You know, it is, and I had checked with my intelligence sources, and one in particular, and we had gone over a lot of the details regarding the banker suicides, of course, suicides in quotation marks, and these appear to be the opening salvos or the opening casualties of a much larger war. If we were to consider World Wars One and Two, of course, numbered appropriately, and the Cold War World War Three, I believe, based on my investigation, my research, that the deaths of these financial assets, these operatives, would suggest the start, or at least the opening salvos of World War 3.2, perhaps, or the continuation of the Cold War. Because if you look at what is taking place in Ukraine and what has taken place in Syria and what is taking place here domestically, I think everyone needs to take a step back, a big step back, and look at everything, because these banker deaths, these financial people, the deaths of these financial people, they didn't happen in a vacuum. And everything seems to be connected. And what we're looking at here, just to set the groundwork, set the stage, so people understand how big this is, we are looking at really an industrial, intelligence, financial, political, energy network, in a military, industrial, political complex, waging war in our name, in the name of every person listening to this, every free person in the West listening to this broadcast, to a war for the future. And the bankers that I had referenced in my February 15th article, which appears on my website as well as Canada Free Press, list the I guess we can call them lieutenants or generals in the war that were taken out. And I believe some were murdered, for example, as you had referenced, the one financial insider who had suffered self-inflicted wounds from a nail gun fired into his torso and his head, yet it was ruled a suicide. I mean...
Right, how about that? Eh?
Yeah. Yeah, think about that. But I think this is a true. You put a tremendous program together tonight, because I do believe your next guest, this will segue very well into your next guest, what he's got to say about the energy and oil chicanery going on here, because
Greg Palast. Yeah, I mean, together the two of you are connecting some amazing dots, and I'd be curious, you know, when you're talking about whether this is sort of presaging World War III, how we go, and you'll walk us through this, I'm sure, but how we go from a list of dead bankers to the Ukraine, to, you know, missing gold, to, you know, Syria, on and on, to World War III. But perhaps, Douglas, maybe we could provide listeners with kind of a timeline, and maybe we could talk about some of the missing and the dead as well.
Certainly. Obviously, the recent spate of bankers or financial individuals began on January 11th with the disappearance, very mysterious disappearance, of David Byrd, 55 years old, longtime reporter for the Wall Street Journal. He was working at the Dow Jones newsroom. And this is extremely important to fit this disappearance in with the deaths, because this gentleman was working, well, he's a reporter, reporting on oil and commodity markets, which happened to be under investigation by the U.S. Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations for Price Manipulation. And as we see going forward from January 11th into February, and even currently, we're seeing financial analysts, financial people dying that are involved in the commodity markets, which means also energy. And energy, I believe, at the crux of this is the energy market in the larger sense. But as we go forward, roughly two weeks later, on January 26th, Tim Dickinson, excuse me, the UK-based communications director at Swiss REAG, he was found dead under undisclosed and still undisclosed circumstances. Well, when you start going through, and William Brokesmith, 58, the same day, a senior manager for Deutsche Bank was found hanging in his home from an apparent suicide. Well, Deutsche Bank, if we start connecting some dots here, Deutsche Bank was under investigation, is under investigation for hiding over $12 billion in losses during the financial crisis and for potentially rigging the foreign exchange markets. Again, we're talking about commodities. We're also talking about energy. And the Deutsche Bank figures prominently in this, as does J.P. Morgan, because at least three of the dead bankers or dead financial individuals have ties to J.P. Morgan. And if I can digress just a moment here, if we look at what's taking place with our domestic security, and I think people might be surprised by this, this should be perhaps more than just a mere footnote. We have an overlap between the too big to fails or the too big to jails, the banks, the huge financial industrial complex, with our intelligence services, even to the point where, for example, in downtown lower Manhattan, the big banks, the J.P. Morgans, the Goldman Sachs, and other domestic banks, are conducting surveillance, videotape surveillance, of lower Manhattan, every square inch, right next to NYPD. And we have the CIA as well, even though they're not chartered for domestic use, through their proxies, involved in surveillance as well.
Now, that's what they call a public-private partnership, I think, Douglas, when we have corporations working with the state, public-private partnership. Some call that fascism.
Well, exactly. Precisely. And you know, this is such a huge topic, because we can think back to where we were in 2008 with the financial crisis. We were, supposedly hours away from, a complete financial meltdown and banks closing and the declaration of martial law here in the United States. That's not conspiracy. That's fact. That's stated fact. Well, you know, what would... what happened then, and if you look at what happened then, I should say, as compared to what's happening right now, this is a continuation. The crisis was never ended. And we can find this, by the way, in the form of the death of Mike Duker, 50 years old, on January 29th. He'd worked for Russell Investments for a period of years. Now, this is the gentleman that allegedly jumped off of the Tacoma Narrows Bridge in Washington State. He was reported missing on the 29th and then found later. And again, police said he could have jumped and over a fence, by the way, and committed suicide. But here's the key. Duker and Brokesmith, that I referenced earlier, had direct connections with one another. But it even gets more sinister than that. Duker served as the assistant vice president and research economist at the Federal Reserve, at the Fed, St. Louis, from 1991 to 2008. Well, he also had intimate knowledge of the Fed's bailout of the Euro banks dating back to 2008. So, and the his counterpart, of course, his counterpart in the UK, Henry Crane, he committed, or allegedly committed suicide a couple of days later.
Executive director in J.P. Morgan's Global Equities Group.
Correct. So the question, and I've been an investigator now for over 25 years, and I'm looking at this and saying, you know, are these people just merely, well, we saw this happen. You know, we saw a lot of the banker deaths back and suicides back in the Depression. Now, could this very well, could this be just merely, what they are, suicides because of their angst over the current economic situation? Well, when you look at the cases themselves, no, I think that the evidence shows a very sinister overlap in something else that's taking place here, a very active rolling, if you will, agenda. And this agenda is for the, well, all the marbles, I suppose one could say. The agenda here is for the control over the future. The future, of course, being energy. The future, the military-industrial complex. We looking at what's at stake, who gets to sell their energy for whatever might be the money of the day as we enter into and then come out of this global economic reset that's that we're headed for. So, you know, right now the number of known financial or dead bankers, or people know the term dead bankers, but the number of deaths associated here is well into the 20s, although we know about 10.
Would we include Autumn Radke, who was the CEO of the Bitcoin exchange in Singapore, or is that something entirely different, you suspect? Or is it tied in, Bitcoin?
Great question. Well, I'm looking at this, and I do suspect that there is a connection. However, it could be on a different level, different game board. If what we're looking at here, and I believe the best assessment could be, is we're looking at this as chess on three levels, and this is what my intelligence source has told me, basically, to look at this as chess on three levels. That would be on a different board, but still within the same chess game. But the Bitcoin itself is interesting because now we have J.P. Morgan coming out and, of course, exercising their patent on a very similar product. And once again, you could take a look at this. If everyone took a few steps back and looked at the bigger picture, I think you could see, or people would see, that there is overlap and interwoven connections among the very people that we're finding dead.
Well, we definitely want to delve into that tonight. Douglas Hagman is with us, the director of the Northeast Intelligence Network and the CEO of Hagman Investigative Services. And we are discussing this trail of dead bankers. Douglas, you say the list now is nearing about two dozen. And many of these bankers, or at least a handful of them, seem to have connections with J.P. Morgan, Deutsche Bank. So as we head into a break, just give us a sense of, I mean, you have, but let's try to nail this down maybe a little more specifically. What is it you think these individuals that have been suicided in some cases, what is it they know that they're not supposed to be telling people?
My best guess, based on my research and investigation and information provided from intelligence sources, tells me that they are witness to the mechanics of the takedown of the U.S. dollar in preparation for a global currency. And they're witness. In addition to that, they're also witnessing the manipulation of commodities, including but not limited to, of course, gold, silver, and also oil.
This is a deliberate destruction of the U.S. dollar to usher in a global currency. Is that right?
Correct, sir.
All right. We'll pick it up on that ominous note when we come back. Douglas Hagman, again, director of the Northeast Intelligence Network. My name is Richard Serrett, sitting in here on Coast to Coast AM. We are here with Douglas Hagman, who is with us to discuss this trail of dead bankers, now the list numbering some two dozen. And Douglas says that if his findings are correct, each of us might soon experience a severe, if not crippling, blow to our personal finances, the confiscation of any wealth some of us may have been able to have accumulated over our lifetimes, and the end of the financial world as we know it. The evidence to support his findings exists in the trail of dead bodies of financial executives across the globe and a missing Wall Street Journal reporter who was working at the Dow Jones newsroom at the time of his disappearance. What do these banker deaths have to do with the fall of the U.S. dollar, the situation in Ukraine, Crimea, missing gold in Fort Knox, and more? We'll find out when Coast to Coast AM continues. After this, my name is Richard Serrett. Welcome back. Richard Serrett sitting in here as your guest host tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Douglas Hagman is also with us, the director of the Northeast Intelligence Network, and he's here to expose what lies beneath the bodies of dead bankers and what lies ahead for us. Douglas, the fact that we have the lifestyle that we do here in North America is largely attributed to the fact that the United States dollar is the world reserve currency. And the last time I checked, it's somewhere south of 79 cents. And the prognosticators that I follow suggest that this is following basically all fiat currencies throughout history. They will eventually attain their intrinsic value, which is absolute zero. And that may be attributed to the quantitative easing and now, of course, the pulling back on that. But there's, and I know you've seen this rumor floating around, and that is that this U.S. dollar collapse is being engineered, and it's going to take place precisely on July 1st this year when the U.S. House of Representatives passed something called Bill H.R. 2847. What do you know about that bill, and what is behind this?
Well, before we get talking specifics about the bill, I think you mentioned a few things of very critical importance here. The fact that, of course, the U.S. dollar is the world's reserve currency. And if we look at what's taking place, if I can digress just a tad here for a moment, if we look at what's taking place with Ukraine and Russia and what has and is still taking place with Syria, and even going back in time with Libya, for example, everything, or at least we're being told that all of these are disparate acts or events, situations. They're not related or not directly related. But I think what's really important, and this does involve the killing off of the U.S. dollar, it doesn't involve upcoming bills in Congress as well. Here's what is taking place, and I think this will add the dimension, necessary dimensionality to what's taking place. Of course, we took out the Soviet Union by way of flooding, attacking their currency, if you will. That was one of the major aspects. That was one of the major ways, methods that we took out the Soviet Union or caused them to break up. Well, if you look at what's taking place right now, and by the way, Vladimir Putin, who's being deified, being described as the John Wayne of the world compared to our weak leadership, at least that's what's being portrayed across the world. If you look at what's taking place right now, the attack, we're into this asymmetrical war, or we're engaged in this asymmetrical war, where we are the world's reserve currency because we have the military to protect the energy and oil shipments all across the West, or perhaps because we have the ability to protect the oil and energy shipments to the Western world. We are the world's reserve currency. The attack is going to be in this asymmetrical war that's going to lead to, no doubt at some point in the future, a shooting war. We have an attack, an asymmetrical attack against the U.S. dollar. With complicity, I contend, and I'm sure Greg Palast, who I have immense respect for in his research and investigations, will verify this. I do believe what we're seeing here is we have taken the side of the wrong people in every war, revolution across the Middle East, in Libya, in Syria, and now in Ukraine. Russia is on the other side. Russia and China actually is on the other side. And we are fighting wars via proxy. And by the way, a war by any other name is still a war. But having said that, we're looking at this asymmetrical warfare where Russia and China, of course, are building up their reserves, their gold reserves. We're seeing other countries that are starting to trade in not in U.S. dollars, trade oil for not U.S. dollars, but for other currencies, gold, whatever. We're seeing the shift away from the U.S. dollar. And this is a way to attack our dollar with the complicity of our congressional leadership, our executive branch, because they are complicit. And they are part and parcel to the ushering in or the paving the way for a new world, a new economy, and of course, a different world reserve currency, something much more nefarious. And if I can step back one more step here, I understand, and I read the forums, I read the internet where people are saying, well, you know, we've got bankers that are committing suicide. Great. Or the Federal Reserve, if a new currency is going to come in, the Federal Reserve is going to tank and it's going to be replaced. Oh, that's great. People aren't looking far enough ahead to see what's going to replace the Federal Reserve. We're going to see a Federal Reserve on steroids, a global reserve that's going to make the Federal Reserve, it's going to make us wish we had the Federal Reserve back as a fiat currency. So I said all that to say this. What Congress is attempting to do, and I truly believe this, although I'm not really keen on dates and I'm more keen on events, looking at events and the hinge moments that lead up to certain events, what I believe is taking place right now is Western complicity, and in particular, congressional complicity, to kill the U.S. dollar through legislation, through other means, asymmetrical means, well, we're poking the bear, so to speak, literally even, that being Russia, through, well, opening fronts in Syria, attempting to topple Assad. Now we're into Ukraine. And, oh, by the way, what was the first organization on the ground in Ukraine before even the last drop of blood was hit the ground? It was the IMF, and our intelligence sources, our intelligence assets, including but not limited to the CIA and even Global Response Staff, GRS, were protecting the IMF agents to institute a new currency there. So when we fit all of this together, and yes, the upcoming legislation or the upcoming House bill, House resolution, that is will ultimately result in the furtherance of an attack on our currency or the allowance of an attack on our currency. We are looking at a great transfer of wealth from this country to Russia and even China. And we can see that. One last thing here to wrap up my thought anyway. What we're seeing as we have been deindustrialized over the years, and once again, we have to step back and look at the bigger picture. Where's all of our industry gone? It's all shifted towards China. It's all shifted east along with the wealth. And we see, for example, J.P. Morgan selling their headquarters in Lower Manhattan to the Chinese firms for at fire sale prices, along with the vault that's underneath the headquarters of J.P. Morgan. Well, what's that all about? People ask, why is China, for example, buying all of the property, the industrial areas here in the United States?
And they're also buying a lot of gold. Hand over fist, they're buying gold.
Yes. While Americans are selling gold, they're buying it. And the thing is this, the shift, the power shift, the transfer of wealth, we will be, instead of some third world country where their population is making the sneakers and making the clothing for slave wages, we are actually going to be replacing those slave markets here in the United States. This is what this is all about. And this is going to be the greatest transfer of wealth, the greatest theft of everything that every American has saved, blood, sweat, tears, worked all of their lives for. It's going to be taken from us without mercy. All of this together, we've got to look at the bigger picture. This is my belief anyway, based on my research.
And again, just to sort of tie this together, Douglas, you're saying that these bankers that are on this death list, that have been suicided, pushed off bridges and thrown off the tops of buildings and so forth, people that are in the prime of their life, people that had, this was totally unexpected from family members and so forth. They were ready to blow the whistle that this is what's coming down the pipe.
Yeah, exactly. And as an investigator, I do understand that things do happen. You know, it occurred to me in a couple of these, and a couple of that I have not mentioned or haven't publicly identified, it's very possible they found something or they saw or witnessed to something, some event, some transaction, some bit of information that they didn't even know they found. So it's very possible that, having some under investigation, ready to be subpoenaed and to testify, what would they have said? So we have to look at that as well. And we're not getting answers from the major mainstream media. We're not getting, no one's talking. So this tells me that there is something much larger at play. This is beyond conspiracy theory. This is, when you fit all the pieces together, a very clear picture emerges. We are being entertained by the mainstream media, where if they even want to mention these deaths, or if they want to even discuss the potential linkage of these.
But if you listen to the mainstream media, Douglas, we're, according to the mainstream media, in the midst of a recovery, a halting one, but a recovery nonetheless. Yet meanwhile, I mean, if you look at the shadow stats in the United States, real unemployment, if you include those people that are underemployed, they've replaced one full-time job with three or four part-time jobs. It's up around 24-25%.
Oh, absolutely. I was in the post office the other day mailing letters, and a woman was standing next to me. She had a child in a bassinet, and she was buying stamps at a book or two at a time, or at least at that time. And the conversation between her and the postmaster or the postal worker, she said, "Yes, I'm buying so many stamps every week in order for me to mail out my wedding invitations here in 6 months." And I'm thinking, okay, here's a person who's got to budget their weekly budget to buy what, $20 worth of stamps a week, and we're in a recovery. I mean, what is that? And of course, shadow stats, very great information about the real numbers. But we're going to see this dollar devaluation by 80%. People talk, and there's this normalcy bias and cognitive dissonance that can't happen here, just like on the Titanic, that can't sink. And oh, by the way, people, this is another misconception. People think that perhaps this is going to happen all at once, or it's going to be one just solid bang, it's going to happen, and we're going to be devalued. It doesn't necessarily have to happen that way. It can. To me, this looks like it's going to be a staircase type of an event, or a snowball rolling down the hill, and it's going to gain speed, gain momentum, and gain additional mass, and I think that's how this takedown is going to happen. And then at the end of the day, people are going to look around and say, "How did this happen?" And it's going to be blamed on some sort of accident with Ukraine or miscalculation. But all of this is pre-planned. From, and I can even go back from the Arab Spring to the present. Every event that you see take place in the world has been pre-planned, and this is truly a banker's war, a financial war, and an overlap between the intelligence agencies of the West.
Webster Tarpley calls these postmodern coups, where what seem like on the surface to be these populist spontaneous uprisings, we have protests sort of in the forefront as camouflage, but really this is about regime change. That happened in Egypt and Tunisia, Morocco. And now they're trying the same thing, of course, in Syria, although Russia and China seem to have drawn the line in the sand there. And here we go again in Ukraine, which I always thought what was going on in Ukraine was about getting NATO missiles in Ukraine. But I guess it goes much further than that.
Indeed, and I think your statement is correct, is accurate, but it to build upon that, you're looking at, of course, Russia is the largest exporter of energy in the world, and this truly is an energy banking war as we see, and the West is striking at Russia. Not only will they're widening the fronts, we struck at Russia via our proxy nation states in Syria, and we're striking at them now via Ukraine. This is a proxy war that includes the bankers, that includes the financial industry, that includes the political venues, that includes the intelligence world. So all of this is combined, and if nothing else, if we can just get people to look at the bigger picture and pay attention to what's really going on, and not the magic, not the smoke and mirrors that we are being told to look at, but look at the other events, the events that are happening, not in front of the curtain, but behind the curtain. And I think that once we do that, we can tie all of this together, including the trail of dead bodies with the bankers.
Now, to those listening, this may sound like it's coming entirely out of left field, but it is related, and we don't have a lot of time to sort of dial back to an investigation that, you know, goes all the way back to 1974. But my question is there any gold left in Fort Knox, or has that all been moved into very secure hands in the East?
Very, very great question. Super question. Very quickly, July 3rd, 1974, people want to talk about alleged suicides. 59-year-old Louise Auchincloss Boyer, she died after reportedly falling from the window of her 10th floor apartment in New York City. The police said, it was probably a suicide. Reminiscent of what's happening today. By the way, the template doesn't change. The playbook doesn't change. The names do. Well, Mrs. Boyer was the granddaughter of Colonel Edward Mandel House, the guy who helped establish the Federal Reserve, get it passed through Congress for the Morgans and the Rockefellers and the Warburgs. It was odd because just 3 days before that, she was identified, or she was the unidentified source that stated, hey, the nation's, America's gold reserves that were held at Fort Knox were sold off, and they were sold off to the Europeans, in particular, the Rockefellers and company. There is no gold in Fort Knox. The United States doesn't have anything but perhaps a token bar or two in Fort Knox. And when we look at that incident and compare it to what's taking place today, boy, there does seem to be this connection.
Well, it certainly makes a lot of sense when Germany, of course, went looking for their gold after the Second World War. Germany moved some of its gold reserves to England, I guess, and some to the United States. They went and they asked for it back, I guess, for safekeeping. And the United States said, well, in about 7 years, you can have a little tiny piece of it.
Exactly.
Why is it so difficult to move gold?
Well, aside from insurance reasons, it should not be. And it's unconscionable that they have not gotten their gold back, the bars that they placed with us for safekeeping.
Listen, Douglas, I wish we had more time, but again, a very difficult time for you, and I really appreciate you coming on, and we'll follow your dispatches as you continue to follow this amazing story of the on the trail of the dead bankers.
I've got a lot more coming, and I want to thank you so much for having me tonight.
Douglas Hagman, Northeast Intelligence Network. My name is Richard Serrett, back with more here on Coast to Coast AM.